In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, October 2nd, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, it is our Executive Suite series where we bring in newsmakers from the very highest levels of the federal government, and they talk about the issues that they are dealing with. And today we begin our biannual series of surveys of chief executives in the federal government. My colleague Jason Miller joining me here to get the series up and rolling today. It's a pleasure to see you as always.
These are fun. These are one of my favorite things to do.
I enjoy these as well. The last time that we did these, we surveyed five office holders in government. We've gone back to the well again with chief information officers, chief acquisition officers, chief human capital officers, performance improvement officers, and there's one that I'm neglecting, which is
the finance man, the people who have the money,
the chief financial officers. And we submitted questions to the people in those jobs across government, and we've collected the responses, and over the next couple of weeks we're going to roll these out in the Executive Suite series. Today we're starting with the chief acquisition officer survey, Jason, and we'll post the results of this at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And before we get into this, I'm going to just take a guess and say that out of the five of these, this is probably your favorite, because I would say of the five, you know a lot about all five areas and the people who do those jobs. But this seems to be, in my view, the area that you enjoy covering very much.
I think it's probably between this and the technology ones.
Okay.
I mean, the CIO response, we get great CIO responses. We got good responses from the other areas. But that's fun. I mean, because acquisition and technology cut across so many different areas. I mean, budget and human capital, that's why we do this, because of how they cut across so many different areas of government and how they're so intertwined. I mean, you really can't have technology without acquisition. You can't have acquisition without finance. You can't have finance without human capital. And all that gets overlaid with performance. So I think that doing these surveys that we do twice a year now, I think it just really opens. It's an anonymous survey, first of all, so that helps. Obviously, no one has to put their name to it. But it really opens the window a little bit on what these different CXOs are thinking, what challenges they're facing. And, you know, we try to mix up the questions a little bit. They're not always the same. You know, we have the usual demographic ones where, you know, do you work at a large agency, small agency? Are you a political appointee or a career appointee? But then the rest, we look at what the trends are. And one perfect trend for this survey was around sequestration and budget issues, because I think that's on everyone's mind.
It's interesting that you talk about that the transposition of the chief information officer position and the chief acquisition officer position, and the integration that we're starting to see between the two jobs in government, manifesting itself at DISA today, the Defense Information Systems Agency. This is information that we have talked about before, but was formalized today. David Bennett is becoming the CIO at DISA. Formerly serving as vice component acquisition executive, and Henry Sinkowitz is becoming the vice chief information assurance executive after serving as CIO there. So there's kind of the Bennett move in particular is an example of that, a very high-ranking acquisition official who goes to become the chief information officer of the
agency. Because I imagine, especially at DISA, when you have someone like that who's probably bought technology for the last so many years that he's been in that position, and therefore now all of a sudden his knowledge base grew. And in fact, one of the things we do talk about in our survey is the TechStat sessions themselves. We did a big special report on TechStat in the August timeframe, and that's where those questions grew out of, saying, okay, well, CIOs are being using TechStat to control projects that are maybe gone off the track a little or need to be make sure reined in. So we asked, hey, chief acquisition officials, are you guys taking part in TechStat? And interesting, first of all, 71% said TechStat was somewhat useful. 14% said they're very useful. And then the other question that I think really stood out to me around TechStat is the idea that they are how much of a role they're playing in it, and how much the acquisition workforce is playing a role. And I think that shows just the integration that's happening.
The idea of the TechStat sessions is one that we'll explore also in our on our survey with the chief information officers. Of all of the questions in this survey, Which one do you think was the most incisive? Which one gave you an answer that you didn't expect, or what jumped out at you, really?
I'm going to point to two of them, I think, that really jumped out at me. I think the first one is, we asked about bid protest decisions and whether agencies actually are planning for delays when they have a big high-profile, high-dollar amount contract. I said, one of the questions we asked is, do you plan for delays? And 75% said they do not plan for delays.
That is an interesting number.
Because I've talked to other people, especially in the DOD community, who've said, oh, we always add an extra 6 months there, figuring it would be delayed.
And the vendors are, too.
The vendors, yeah. I mean, I think absolutely the vendors are. The other thing is, I'm going to go back to suspension debarment and bid protests. Again, another thing that we asked was, how is the focus by OFPP and Congress on how agencies are using suspension and debarment changing the way your agency views or uses suspension and debarment as a tool? And in fact, 62, almost 63% said it hasn't changed at all, while 37% said they've become more aggressive, and nobody said they've become less aggressive.
What do you think that means?
I think that what we found is some agencies who maybe weren't very using suspension and debarment now said, okay, they got the message. We better start using this as a tool. And I think other agencies, hey, we feel like we're on the right path, and we're going to continue down that path because we think it's the right one, the right way to use this tool. So I think those are some of the things that definitely stood out to me from the results of the survey.
Now, what we'll do throughout the course of this survey series is the same thing we did when we have run it before, and that is not just Jason and I speak to each other about this, but speak to experts in each of these areas about what they believe these results mean and what they take from these results. And in a moment, you'll hear our conversation with Joe Jordan, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy Administrator. Out of our conversation with Joe, what was your takeaway from that as far as when he analyzed these results and we had a chance to listen to what he had to say?
A couple of things that I think stood out from our conversation with Joe Jordan, the OFPP administrator. I think the first one is he's still obviously getting used to the position. When you listen to his responses, they're still very high level. He doesn't quite get into the weeds yet. He's still saying, hey, when I'm talking to acquisition folks, here's what I'm learning. And I think that this survey kind of opens is another portal for him to kind of say, okay, now I understand that just a little bit better now. I think the other thing is he spends a lot of time around small business contracting, and that's something actually we didn't address in the survey directly, but we got into when we talked to him, that's where the conversation led us. And I think the fact is that the small business task orders, the ability to set aside task orders for small businesses, we spent a lot of time on that. And I would point our listeners to listening to that conversation because I thought that was very insightful.
We spent about a half hour with Joe at the executive office building, the new EEOB, right next to the White House. And we're not, unfortunately, going to have time to hear the entire conversation on the radio. It is archived for you later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. Jason sent my entire conversation with Joe Jordan. And Jason, you are going to join me at the end to kind of help wrap this up.
Absolutely.
All right, excellent. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. The results of the CAO survey are on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The entire conversation with Joe Jordan is there, and a highlight to get our program started when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Faster, easier way for your agency to go green. Choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EPEAT, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
Quest Government Services is now CenturyLink Government. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and strong financial standing, we are the partner for IT leaders looking toward a stronger, more connected tomorrow. Your link to the future begins here. See the benefits of partnering with us at CenturyLink.com/federal.
This GovCloud Minute provided by Amazon Web Services. I'm talking cloud computing security with Mark Ryland, the Chief Solutions Architect for Amazon Web Services' worldwide public sector team. Mark, how are your customers able to build their cloud applications and meet the latest security requirements for their agencies?
At AWS, we provide robust physical security, isolation and control at the network layer, the storage layer, and on virtual machines. All familiar best practices for customers today. Many agencies have been able to improve their security posture using the AWS cloud because the ease of deploying and managing cloud infrastructure gives them greater visibility and control over their IT resources. And for more sensitive workloads, our customers have access to GovCloud, a U.S. government region built and operated to ITAR requirements.
Join AWS at the Public Sector Summit to learn more about GovCloud and more. October 10th in Washington, D.C. Visit aws.amazon.com/gov to register.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Wednesday's Federal Drive. The Public Building Service is doubling down on its efforts to improve energy efficiency in federal buildings. The new commissioner, Dorothy Robine, joins us to talk about the Green Proving Ground. Plus, does the nation need a weather commission? The University Corporation for Atmospheric Research thinks so, and we'll find out why. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the Executive Suite today. My colleague, Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, and I talking to the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, Joe Jordan, about the results of our Chief Acquisition Officer survey. And the conversation begins with the first question from Jason.
This is our second biannual survey of chief acquisition officers. And obviously, the goal here is just to get a sense of the trends, what's going on. And I know that you've been in the position now for about 3 months. Give me a sense of the trends you're seeing from the meetings you've had kind of across the board with all the different acquisition officers and senior procurement executives across government.
Absolutely, Jason. And thank you for having me. I think the trends that I'm seeing are overwhelmingly positive, especially in the areas of buying smarter, figuring out how we can spend every last taxpayer dollar most effectively and efficiently in procuring the goods and services that our agencies need. Secondly, in terms of doing the proper oversight and accountability to make sure that taxpayer dollars are protected throughout the contracting process. And lastly, and this plays into both of those, continuing to develop our acquisition workforce. This is a real challenge for our agencies, and I've seen some really positive trends in that area.
Let's talk about each of those maybe a little separately. Obviously, one of the things about buying smarter that we asked about was the idea of potential budget cuts and how to plan for them. And obviously, the big S word is still out there. We know what you're going to say about that, so we won't really ask you too much about sequestration specifically. But one of the things that the respondents told us is that overwhelmingly, almost 57% said actually they're not even preparing for budget cuts or sequestration. Is that because things were already done, meaning they've already kind of, that preparation was done 6 or 9 months ago, maybe not for sequestration specifically, but for the reduction in budgets?
Yeah, I think with the budget situation overall, agencies have some good foreknowledge usually into what their agency budgets will look like. And so by this point in the fiscal year, I would hope that they're in the process of executing some really solid acquisition plans that they had developed earlier in the fiscal year and are now deploying. So that answer doesn't surprise me. I think that the important thing is to make sure that planning is integral to the acquisition process overall, to make sure that agencies are doing good acquisition forecasting, creating robust plans, and conducting the appropriate market research so they can cast a wide net for new businesses that can deliver the goods and services that they need in the best possible way, and then deploy that over the course of the year so that at the end of the fiscal year, it's not a sprint, nor are they, you know, developing brand new plans.
But what about for 13 and 14 and beyond? Because, I mean, obviously 12 is pretty much done. Whatever they're buying now, they planned in 11. But are you starting – when you talk to the CAOs and the SPEs, are they saying, well, here's how we're addressing lower – what we expect will be lower budgets in 13, 14 and beyond?
They are, and I think that – that's one of the big policy areas that the Office of Federal Procurement Policy works with all the agencies on, because our goal would be for them to continue to get the high-quality goods and services that they need to perform their agency's mission in a more efficient and effective way. Things like strategic sourcing, increased small business utilization, all of these are areas where planning ahead really pays dividends. The market research that you do either before fiscal year or at the beginning of fiscal year really helps you spend your taxpayer dollars on your government contracts in the most efficient and effective way.
The agencies that are making those preparations well, what do you think they're doing to make those preparations, as Jason said, for 13, 14 and beyond?
They're looking at all of the things that they buy, how they currently procure those goods and services, and taking a real hard look at, are there ways, innovative ways, that we can do things a little bit differently? You know, examples are, hey, we've got this new requirement. Instead of going through a long process to stand up a new vehicle to procure that good or service, let's look at what's already out there. And that requires some coordination. It's a place where OFPP is working hard to facilitate easy checking, easy dialogue on the agency's part. But looking at ways that they can get what they need just as effectively, but a lot more efficiently. And I think that's a way that they can both save time and dollars and still get the goods and services they need.
So one of the things that we've talked about several times and you've spoken on recently is the idea of this multiple work contract database, which is still in the process of being put together. Do you have a prototype? Do you have something where maybe it's maybe people can look at, you know, all the GWACs are easy, but the multiple work contracts is what's more difficult. Do you have something that's already in process where people can at least go and at least check through it, even cursory?
So right now where we are in terms of what's been deployed is ensuring that any new multiple award contracts the agency want to stand up have an accompanying business case that is submitted to the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and we then syndicate with their peers, their chief acquisition officer and senior procurement executive peers, to make sure that this is not going to be duplicative to something that already exists and is great out there. You referred to one of my big priorities, which is creating an interagency contracting directory. I think multi-agency, multiple award contracts are great things and can drive better value and increased efficiency. But I do know that for far too long, these had been done in not a fully baked, thoughtful way, but somewhat duplicative. And so this is an area where great strides have already been made in this administration with the creation of this business case process. And right now we're syndicating with agencies for their review and comment the framework of what this interagency contracting directory would look like.
I want to go jump. I want to tack back to the survey. The survey said, you know, one of the ways we said, how are you preparing for those potential budget cuts? In fact, about 43% said using those multiple award contracts, GSA schedules, strategic sourcing, BPAs, or others. The increase, though, at GSA, and I know you don't work there, but you probably get reports often. Are you seeing that uptick? I mean, I know, like, for instance, strategic sourcing, you've talked about how the savings are pretty significant, and agencies and the number, the 76% of all, I think, awards have gone to small business. But what about some of the other multiple award contracts?
Sure. At the end of the year, you know, we'll have better data on exactly what the uptick or current level of utilization was. But we have seen a clear upward trend in the utilization of multi-agency and multiple award contracts. One of the great things about that is that it drives efficiency when done well. Another thing is that, especially where it's accompanied by the new Small Business Jobs Act rules around set-asides for small businesses on multiple award contracts, including the federal supply schedule that you referenced, Jason, is that you can capture that increased efficiency, increase your small business utilization, and save money, and save your contracting officers time. I mean, I don't know how many wins that is, but it's like a win, 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 win.
That's Joe Jordan, the administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. My conversation with him and my colleague Jason Miller joining me in the questions there. And Mr. Jordan talking about our Chief Acquisition Officer survey that you can read at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You can hear our conversation with Joe Jordan posted there, too. And you can hear more of that in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
For more than 60 years, Raytheon has been a leader in the continuous improvement of one of the nation's most important assets, the National Airspace System. The FAA and Raytheon are working together to replace current systems with new technology that will support greater capacity and enhanced capabilities, safely and cost-effectively. Benefits also include saving fuel, cutting down on noise, and reducing carbon emissions. Modernization of air travel. It's happening today.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Threats evolve, stakes rise in a virtual blink. Agencies must balance cyber risks and rewards at threat speed. Turn to Deloitte. We blend public sector experience and private sector insights to help defense and civilian agencies manage threats and share information with trust. So you can manage the cyber risks you know and get ahead of the ones you don't. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
TV and teens wait. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, TV watching and teens' weights seem to go together. Researchers at the University of Minnesota saw indications of that in a year-long study of 153 adults and 72 teens. The researchers used devices that limited the number of hours a TV was on. Families kept track of how much TV people watched. Teens who watched less TV wound up with better weights. Researcher Simone French says this indicates TV could be a way for parents to help to control kids' weight.
Especially with young kids, that's where things are happening, and parents are really the managers of the home environment and set the stage for these behaviors.
The study in the Journal of Nutrition, Education, and Behavior was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Joe Jordan, the administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, joining my colleague Jason Miller and I in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, and looking at the results of our 2012 Chief Acquisition Officer survey, and in this highlight, he talks about some of the results that he saw there.
Is there any other metric besides the actual percentage, the goals that you're shooting for, that you can say that we are being successful or we're not being successful in being able to meet that challenge and make that culture shift? Because it's possible you could get close or you could see a certain incremental change and say, well, we're at least headed in the right direction.
Well, hey, the goal is to meet the goals. You know, I'm not going to say anything other than that. I will not declare victory until that we've met and exceeded that 23% in the associated socioeconomic goals. But at the same time, absolutely, there are a number of areas where we've seen concrete improvements in agency performance, in agency efforts, in agency outreach and engagement with the small business community and trying to get more folks into contracting. Because at the end of the day, I think the silver bullet here is bridging the awareness gap that exists where small businesses who are trying to run their business every day might not know about, you know, the hundreds of thousands of contracts that agencies are putting out. So getting them aware of what might be good for them to pursue is huge, and then having the agencies aware of all the great small businesses that can provide what they need. And so we've absolutely seen positive strides made there, and I look forward to them being reflected in increased performance.
How much of it, though, is the agency's responsibility to do that outreach, or at what point can they say, listen, we've put a lot of effort forth and we've in some cases, used a fair amount of resources to try to generate this business, and we're either, for whatever reason, we're not finding the people out there who are able to do what we need them to do.
Well, that's one of those areas where, as much as this is a challenge for agencies to meet, the statute is very clear that small businesses should be given maximum practicable opportunity. And so when agencies say, hey, we've tried, but geez, we're just a little bit short, I say, well, let's go through all of your contracts, and I bet we can find some where you could have done a little bit better. And that's not to beat up the agencies who do an incredible job, and I know firsthand care passionately about this issue, but it's to encourage them to never stop. You know, you say, when is it enough? I don't know, but we're not there. And we're going to continue to do more, and agencies are going to continue to do more to help increase our utilization of small businesses.
I want to pick up on something you talked about, the change of culture, the communication, because one of the questions we asked in the survey was around the Mythbusters campaign. And it's interesting, the two questions we asked, one which was OPP's Mythbusters campaign is, we said, effective, losing steam, not effective, political theater. Then we also asked, over the last year, my agency's conversations with industry have gotten easier, gotten harder, stayed about the same. And on the first question about the campaign itself, about 38% said it's effective, 38% said it's not effective. But then at the same time, when you talk about over the last year, my conversations with industry have either gotten easier, 38%, or about stayed the same. Nobody said it's gotten harder. So there seems to be two different schools of thought here. Give me a sense of what you're hearing from agencies around Mythbusters and whether that is the impact that those two memos are having.
Sure, and I think you're right to tie those two questions and their associated responses together, and here's why. I think it makes sense that while many people are saying the Mythbusters campaign is effective, some are still desirous of us to do more, because I think the folks who are saying it's not effective aren't, I don't mean to speak for them, but what I've heard is they're not saying this wasn't a good idea or it's not effective when the contracting folks and the vendors read them. It's that we need to do more to get this out there, to make everybody aware of the Mythbusters memos and the myths that these dispel. And so I think that those folks are absolutely right, and we are doing more to syndicate these and make sure that both businesses and contracting officers are aware that these myths are just that, not facts but myths. And that goes to the second part, which is, you know, agencies conversations with industry. Nobody said it's getting harder. You know, two-thirds said stayed about the same, a third said getting gotten easier. Well, that's fine. You know, that means we're making progress, and it's the right area to push, and we're not making it any harder. We're only making it easier, and we need to continue to either build upon the myths that need busting and or circulate more broadly the myths we've busted so that that state about the same moves into the easier. And there's always going to be a natural tension. You know, we don't want it to be pendulum to swing too far in one direction, but we do think that there is a great value in having these vendor communication between the contracting officers and the businesses.
So what do you think drives that to continue that, to make that two-thirds number look a lot bigger next time? And not that your goal is just to meet our survey quotas, but but seriously, what does that look like?
I think there's two prongs. One, continuing to canvas both industry and agencies to find out if there are additional challenges or myths that we need to address, so a potential Mythbusters 3 or Mythbusters 4 that would have those new items. And then second prong, continuing to push out the communication we've already done to say it is all right to have these types of communications with vendors. It's all right to share information that they give you within the government. All of these things that, you know, you get different answers depending on who you talk to. We need to get the right answer, and it needs to be the right one, and it's going to encourage greater and better and more productive communication between vendors.
Now, when I talk to vendors every week in my industry chatter series, inevitably, when we get to this part of the conversation, either on the air or off, there's two words that I hear, and it's risk aversion. And the vendors say all the time the agencies are still kind of in the mode of we're going to do whatever gives us the least opportunity, least exposure to risk, either a potential protest or somebody coming over their shoulder and saying, no, you didn't do it right. How do you break out of that?
Well, I think that's a real challenge, and I would give the contracting officers some support here because I understand where they're coming from. You know, I don't think that the industry folks that you're chatting with are wrong in pointing to that risk aversion as a challenge that we need to overcome, but I also think it's fair for the contracting officers. You look at the incentives in this system, and they, in many cases, lead contracting officers to a place of less risk is better, without a corresponding value placed upon the reward of that risk. So what are we going to do? One, I'm going to continue to work with all the contracting officers to make sure that they're properly trained and that I'm aware of what challenges they're facing, and to the extent I can at my level, have those discussions with agency leadership so they foster the right level of risk. That doesn't mean more risk. It just means having the appropriate risk-reward trade-offs throughout the system. It means looking at Part 1 of the FAR, where it says, hey, contracting officer, a person reading this, if we haven't said in this book you can't do it, assume you can do it. Mm-hmm. And instilling that spirit in folks, a can-do innovative attitude, not a can't-do, I'm hiding behind the rule. It doesn't explicitly say I can, so I won't. And I think that that's both a communications. It goes back to the mindset and the culture you referred to earlier. But I think that the juice is really worth the squeeze on this one. And if we can get it right, the impact will be positive.
And that's where I wanted to go next is the culture here, because that's really at the heart of what the industry people are saying to me is the mindset, the worldview of the people that they run into is I'm going to do whatever gives me the least likelihood of getting myself into trouble, essentially.
That's right. You know, we have a lot of oversight in our government contract community, and I think that's a good thing. I'm glad that Congress and the GAO and inspectors general look at our world and push us to be better. At the same time, we need to also figure out corresponding positive incentives and positive reinforcement for our contracting officers so they can say, hey, you know what? I did something innovative, and it resulted in a better outcome for the taxpayer, a better outcome for my agency, and I want the spotlight to be shown on that as well, just as brightly as it is when people make mistakes.
That's Joe Jordan, the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, talking to me and my colleague Jason Miller, and an exclusive interview about the results of our Chief Acquisition Officer survey. Jason will join me later on in the hour, but more from Joe Jordan in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and you can hear the entire conversation about a half hour long at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Today
is the day to make the switch, to decide that you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in home security.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring. I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified, so I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Call today and get 2 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. That's AckermanSecurity.com.
70 years is a lifetime, but for one federal employee, it's just how long he's worked for the U.S. Navy. Federal News Radio talks with the man who started his naval career in 1942 as a radio inspector and who now steers billions of dollars in contracts towards small businesses. What has kept Sarkis Tatigan ticking for nearly one-third of the Navy's history? What do his coworkers think of the man they call Mr. T? See the ceremony honoring Tatigan's 70 years of service at federalnewsradio.com. Search 70 years.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Joe Jordan, the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, joining my colleague Jason Miller and I for a conversation about the results of our 2012 Chief Acquisition Officers Survey. And in this highlight of our conversation, we continue the discussion that you heard just a few moments ago when we were talking about the worldview, the way that the Chief Acquisition Officers and acquisition pros at agencies look at procurement and how they interact with the vendor community.
We keep coming back around to culture, communication, and I know your office, working with Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO, has talked about vendor management organizations. There's several out there, IRS, Patent and Trademark Office, that have more mature ones, others that are coming through. Where do you see the VMO's role in helping that communication and really helping you accomplish those three priorities you listed initially?
Well, I think vendor management offices are a great idea. And where do I see their role? Well, I think it's going to evolve. So I don't have the end state to articulate to you right now. But what I think is really important is that the VMO can work on behalf of the agency, or in some cases multiple agencies, to work with that vendor and figure out what is the best solution for the government, for the taxpayer, that will get us what we need in the most cost-effective way. We hear all the time from vendors, hey, we could have done this or given you this at a better price, but you know, by the time the solicitation was out, it was worded that the engine screw needs to be in this exact spot. If we could only have moved it over, we wouldn't have to change our line. We could have saved you a bunch of money and given you the same thing. But on the flip side, going back to what are the contracting officer's incentives? Once they've got those specs done up, they're not looking for that change. And so how do we incentivize that? Well, a VMO, a vendor management office, is a great way to do that. It also goes to buying smarter. We've got multiple agencies, or even sometimes bureaus within one agency, paying different prices for the same things to the same vendor. We've got to get a handle on that. And that's where a lot of the work we're doing to better look at and analyze as prices paid will come into play. And I think VMOs are a great way to do that.
Do you foresee having a multiple agency VMO, or do you foresee maybe someone like GSA filling that role eventually, or will each agency set up their own VMO over the next 6 or 9 months?
I honestly think it could end up being all three of those things. I think that agencies, especially at first, will still want to have their own players in the game and continue the good relationships they have with many of their vendors, and I think that makes sense, and I think it's a good first step to have it intra but cross agency. And then, you know, we will, you know, GSA has more touch points with vendors than anyone else, so I think it makes a lot of sense for them to adopt some of these approaches. And then I think multi-agency vendor management offices make a lot of sense as well. I think a big place where that will come into play are things like strategic sourcing, where you'll look at what's a commodity or a service-based approach versus just an agency-centric approach. And I think that these are ways that we can really get at delivering increased value and still getting the really important goods and services we need.
One of the other things that you brought up oversight, and we did ask about suspension, debarment, and the use of the tool in the survey. And one of the things that we asked three questions around that. One question was, you know, whenever my agency runs a high-profile, high-dollar procurement, we plan for delays because of bid protests. And I'll tell you, this was probably the most surprising answer that we got from the survey, at least to me. 75% said they disagreed with that statement, which I was expecting 75% to agree with it. On the other hand, we asked also, you know, are vendors more aggressive in using bid protests over the last than at any time in the last 5 years? And their response was about even. 50% said yes, 50% said no. And then finally we asked about the focus from OFPP and Congress on how agencies are using suspension and debarment. And in fact, most agencies said they haven't changed. About 63% said they haven't changed the way. From your perspective, there's a memo that came from OMB around suspension and debarment. What are you seeing for the use of the tools? And I know it's one tool in the big toolbox of oversight, but I think that a lot of it's the use of suspension debarment as a tool is very scary to vendors.
Yeah, so first, just quickly on the bid protest points you made, I think those two questions, the first two highlight that to me, that while agencies may feel that protest numbers are increasing, and I haven't seen the raw data to confirm or refute that. Either way, they're quite confident in the work that they have put into their award, and so therefore are not scared of those protests or, you know, planning for those in a way that would indicate they haven't done all the work up front to make a protest-proof acquisition. I think that's great. In terms of suspension and debarment, this is a really important tool, as you said, that agencies have to fight fraud, waste, and abuse. It's a way to protect taxpayer dollars. It's not a retributive punishment, but it's a way to immediately protect taxpayer dollars if you're concerned about a particular vendor or set of vendors. What are we doing there? A number of things. And I think, you know, you'll see in the next short period communication from me along with a report from the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee on this very issue, highlighting some of the really good progress that has been made since that memo you talked about. I went to the ISDC, the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee, meeting just last week to highlight to them how critically important the work that they're doing is, both to me, the administration, and all of us collectively in this community, to say, you know, we appreciate the recommendations that they've made, the big lift that they've done. I mean, every agency now having a senior accountable official in this area is huge. My experience at SBA really informs my stand on this issue in the OFPP job, which is you need to be thoughtful before you engage in suspension and debarments. It's not a retributive tool, but at the same time, it is a very powerful arrow to have in your quiver as you're fighting fraud, waste, and abuse. And I think that this administration has made huge strides in this area over the last few years, and I'm excited to continue those.
That's OFPP Administrator Joe Jordan on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about some of the results of our 2012 Chief Acquisition Officer Survey. My colleague Jason Miller back in studio with me in just a moment to talk more about the results. You can hear the entire conversation with Joe Jordan at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's posted there for you right now. Coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose, more on our survey with Jason Miller in just a moment.
Listen to WTOP and Federal News Radio to hear the GovCloud Minute, insight from Mark Ryland, the Chief Solutions Architect for Amazon Web Services' worldwide public sector team. Find out how your agency can build its cloud applications and meet the latest security requirements. You can also achieve cost savings and improve application delivery time through AWS's flexible cloud solutions. Read this week's GovCloud Minute on federalnewsradio.com, keyword Amazon. Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers.
Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Pentagon says Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta placed calls to Afghan's Minister of Defense and Minister of Interior to congratulate them on recent appointments. Panetta and the ministers expressed, according to the Pentagon, their eagerness to work together to address a number of important issues, not the least of which is continuing insider attacks in Afghanistan. 53 people have been killed thus far this year, the latest attack yesterday. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, drug smuggling and violence threaten America's southwest border. Border Patrol agents need to identify and track moving targets more than 7 miles away. Only General Dynamics has built the tower system that keeps watch over 40,000 miles of U.S. coastline. Only EADS has installed systems that protect more than 8,000 miles of national land border worldwide. Together, they are the right team to protect the nation's borders. Learn more at borderdetection.com.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Thursday, October 4th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will focus on data center consolidation, progress, and best practices. The panel includes government leaders from the Department of Treasury, USDA, and NNSA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Thursday, October 4th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Juniper Networks, Schneider Electric, and HP.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You've been hearing throughout the course of the hour parts of the conversation with Joe Jordan, the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. My colleague Jason Miller and I conducting that conversation, and Jason's back in studio with me now to talk more about the results of our Chief Acquisition Officers survey. Two areas of the survey that we questioned
CAOs.
Yes, thank you very much. CAOs in government about that I would like to go over the results of. One of them's Mythbusters. Go review some of the questions and some of the results on Mythbusters.
Well, first, Mythbusters is the administration's attempt to really improve communication between agencies and vendors. The idea that these myths have built up over time, and how can they break down those untruths so communication can be easier, can be better. So this is something that we've been following since Dan Gordon, the former OFPP administrator, released Mythbusters 1 memo. Mythbusters 2 memo came out, and Joe Jordan talked about a potential 3 and 4 that it could be on the way in the next year or so, assuming he's still in his position. And if the president wins the re-election, obviously if he doesn't, then that's a whole different story. But the idea here is we ask, okay, so what is going on with Mythbusters? What are people finding? And so we asked two questions. One, we said, basically fill in the blank. OFPP's Mythbusters campaign is, and we said, effective, losing steam, not effective, political theater. And interestingly, 37.5%, almost 38%, said that it was effective. 38% said it was not effective. 12% says losing steam, and the other 12% said political theater. So it was an interesting split. But what I found about this is that people are finding it having an impact, and I think that is a positive sign. Now, the fact is there are also just as many people who said it's not having an impact also shows, and that's something we talked to Joe Jordan about, shows that the level of understanding of the why Mythbusters they think is important has not reached certain levels of government yet. Maybe understood by some CAOs, but it hasn't been pushed down. And then maybe even some CAOs look back and say, I'm not seeing the benefits here. So I thought that was one interesting thing that came back. The other thing that we talked about was we asked more of a direct question about, instead of bringing up the term Mythbusters, We said over the last year, my agency's conversations with industry have, again, multiple choice, gotten easier, gotten harder, stayed about the same. And this shows, I think, where Mythbusters is having an impact. 37%, almost 38% says gotten easier, and 63% says stayed about the same. Nobody said gotten harder. So even if they don't believe Mythbusters is necessarily effective, they're not saying as well that the conversations with industry has changed. It's stayed the same or gotten easier.
And both of those results fit perfectly with the anecdotal data that I'm collecting from industry chatter guests, from other folks that I meet in at events and so on in industry. The general consensus overall seems to be kind of like a GAO report. Yeah, some progress, but still plenty of room to improve. And that fits right with both of those answers, it seems.
I would agree. And I think that there are some areas that probably have gotten easier, some areas where contracting officers are more willing to talk to vendors. But then the government's decision and continued reliance on RFIs and industry days, that kind of stagnates the process to make communication easier, because when you put 50 or 100 or 300 contractors in a room, nobody's going to ask a question, especially not a real question. They're going to say, well, can we extend the date of the RFI, or can we have more time? Or when you say X, what do you really mean? They're not going to ask the really hard questions, which they care about from a proprietary, for lack of a better word, standpoint.
The other thing that we asked some questions about that I want to make sure we have a chance to cover, we just have a couple of minutes left, is workforce training. What's on the minds of the CAOs that responded to this based on the questions that we asked and the responses that we got, do you think?
Well, one common theme you hear about budget cuts and obviously sequestration that's could be coming is training is the first thing that's cut. So we asked two simple questions about acquisition training and acquisition workforce training. The first is a very simple yes or no, basically agree or disagree answer. My agency is cutting training for the acquisition workforce. 83% said, I disagree with that. We are not. And while 13% said they are, 12% said they are. So I think what that shows is that the training is, so far is not on the chopping block. So then we went one step further and said, my agency is, and we asked them to pick one, spending more money on training for the acquisition workforce, spending less money on training, spending about the same. And interestingly, 50% said they're spending about the same to train acquisition workforce, and 38% said they're actually spending more money, and only 13% said they're spending less money on training. But nobody, very few, only one respondent said they're not, that they're going to cut training altogether.
Overall, almost out of time, overall, what are your thoughts about the responses that we got and the analysis that we got from Joe Jordan on the CAO survey, Jason?
My big takeaway from this is acquisition workers seem to, the recognition that the role they play is getting stronger. There's still far ways to go with the communication with industry, but to see that training is not being cut, to see that they are looking at stuff like strategic sourcing and multiple work contracts, I think there is some movement in a positive direction. And again, this is the second survey we've done. When we go back in January to do this again, we'll have more data.
All right. My colleague Jason Miller on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can find the results of this posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Joe Jordan conversation with you and me is posted there as well. And we're going to continue this series all throughout the month of August.
October.
With some of the
sorry.
August. You know, thank you. It's the month of October.
People to get confused.
I don't blame you, and I'm doing a pretty good job of that. October 16th, Rob Carey will join us to talk about our Chief Information Officer survey, and you'll be in on that as well.
Absolutely. That should be a great survey. I mean, Rob has been around. He's at the Navy. He's at the DOD Deputy CIO, so that should be a fun conversation.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.